Hello, Earthlings! Just wanted to give you guys a heads up. Due to some unforeseen technical difficulties, our audio quality of this episode is not up to par as it normally is. We spent a lot of time trying to clean it up and fix it, but something went wrong in the recording process, and we just had to make do. So rest assured that we are taking steps to make sure this doesn't happen again, but in the meantime, please enjoy this episode of Earthling Entertainment.
For Earthling Entertainment, the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture, with your host, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Lang.
I love it. I'm a fan of this. I'm here for it.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Earthling Entertainment, with your hosts, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Lang.
That's right. I'm your host who found a magical hoodie buried in a box in his backyard. And when I put on that hoodie, I can transform to different places in time. It's kind of like Mighty Max.
Okay.
In fact,
okay.
It's a direct ripoff of Mighty Max.
Yeah, he had the hat.
Yeah. It's a small Korean animation company, and we're hoping no one will notice because it's like a 30-year-old show.
So is there like a big J on the hoodie? Because
he just had
the big M on the hat.
Yeah, and I could pick my colors, right? So it's a nice green J.
Okay, nice green J.
For Joe. What is it? Jammin' Joe. No?
That's right. Well, I mean,
a pitch for a different show. This show is Earthling Entertainment.
That's right. And everybody likes a green J every now and then. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's funny. Saying? See, I didn't even make that association, and now I feel like it's going to be, like, implied forever. Sad.
Yeah.
So, guys, are you joining us for the first time? You might be wondering, especially if that very strange intro, what this show is about. Oh, wait, you never said your name. You're Ryan.
Hi. I'm Ryan.
It's true.
And I enjoy a green jay.
Anywho, if you're joining us for the first time and you want to know what this show is about, I'm going to tell you. We're pretty much split down the middle between paranormal and pop culture. And so we have a section called Spooky Stuff, which is usually cryptids, hauntings, myths, legends. We have a section called Disclosure Discussion that's all about aliens. We have a little section in the middle that's pretty much all your pop culture news. And then we top it all off at the end with a bit of real world weird. When something isn't quite paranormal and not quite pop culture, but it sure is strange, it goes in that section.
Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's messed up.
That's right. And that creates a layer cake of a podcast known as Earthling Entertainment. Welcome.
Welcome indeed. And to everybody who tunes in every week, thank you guys so much. We appreciate all the downloads. For you guys first tuning in, thanks for tuning in. And please download the episode wherever you listen to podcasts. It really supports us.
He's right. The downloads actually do matter. You know, it's how, advertisers and stuff get in touch with us and things of that nature. But I wanted to start the show with kind of my experience over the last few months that Ryan doesn't even know about. This is a journey that I've been going on.
Solo.
Yeah, that me and my wife have been battling with a evil corporization. Yeah. So, guys, I go to Motor City Comic Con. I love cons. I go to as many as I can. Well, Motor City Comic Con is the biggest one in Detroit area. Mm-hmm. There's a good amount of celebrities, good amount of booths. It's pretty big.
It's a cool one. Yeah,
it is. Well, they have a CGC booth, which is the people who grade comics, magazines, things like that. You know, you give it to them, pay about $100 with a membership, and they send it back all graded and fancy and in plastic. All right, so I have this thing called Horrorcore Magazine, and it started, I think, in like 2013, because what I had here was issue number 4, and our good friend, our mutual friend, was on the cover. His name was Jeff Moser, but known in the Horrorcore crew as Mr. Stitches. He was the second half of a Horrorcore group called Mental Ward. They were pretty big locally, and actually pretty big all over the place. Anybody who was into that scene and that music in the early 2000s will have known about him.
Yeah.
Well, long story short, he had passed away, unfortunately, and by this time, the Horrorcore magazine decided to honor him by putting him on the cover. So, of course, I got one. He was my best friend since kindergarten, and I wanted to honor him. Well, years later, in November of last year, I gave it to CGC to grade, and it usually takes a few months. And what happened is, we reached out to him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we were just simply like, hey, you know, what's the update? And they're like, oh, we don't know. You never sent it to us. Like, hold on. We gave it to your guys at the booth. We gave it to you at the booth. We have the confirmation email. And we did.
Okay.
And then she's like, oh, well, do you have the piece of paper we handed you? No.
It's
no.
Like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Yeah, like, you're fucked.
No, we don't have the piece of paper. And she's like, oh, well, then we can't prove that we ever got it. I'm like, well, we handed it to you. And this battle went on for a while, and it got really catty. My wife was emailing them back and forth without me even knowing, because I, because sentimental value, it being my buddy on the cover, you know what I mean? Like,
it's a big deal.
It is. And it's not like it was a huge magazine. I don't know if they even still are around, you know what I mean? So it's like presumably relatively rare. So it comes out that it's gone. It's lost. And they're pretty much saying, well, you can't prove you gave it to us. Here are some names of random vendors at the convention, and you can contact them and ask if you accidentally gave it to one of them. Like, really, we don't believe you kind of stuff.
That's bull. Yeah, I mean, that sucks.
Well, they just gave us names. They didn't even give us emails or phone numbers. And my wife's like, how am I supposed to contact these people? And she's like, I don't know. You could Google them.
My God.
Right?
Like, customer service is, like, on fleek.
And CGC is the people who grade stuff. So it's not like you have many alternatives. And even if you do find another company that does it, most people who buy these graded comics and these collectibles don't care if it's not CGC. So there you go. It's kind of like when you buy something and it's like, you know, I don't know, this is the Brazilian FDA. And you're like, I don't know about that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, in any case, my old roommate, Tessa, lovely woman, ended up tracking one down online, buying it for me, and having it sent to me. So I never thought I'd be able to get it again because I was really upset. And I got this other copy now. And I'm very thrilled that I got it. About 2 days later, CGC emails us and say, hey, we found it.
I'll be dang.
Right? And so they're like, all right, well, we're going to give you like a $50 credit and we'll just put a rush on it and we'll send it to you right away. And like, not even really an apology or anything. Like, I think the woman said, sorry for my catty attitude, because my wife said something like, you know, that was snarky. But like, nothing really apology or whatever. It was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess you weren't lying. We'll send it over. You're welcome. So that wasn't fun. That wasn't fun, Ryan.
I'm glad you got it back. And, yeah. You know, you got an extra copy.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, right? And so now the graded one will go on the wall and the extra copy I could read, which might be a good thing, because I don't know if this extra copy was printed, like they had a PDF and they reprinted it, or if it's an original. It's really hard to tell. It was in like a website that does magazine archives and claims to have all these things that you could order from way back when, which leads me to believe that they probably are reprinting them, but I don't know. I didn't look into it. In any case, it's nice to have a copy I could look at.
No, it is cool. And you rarely win at those things. And yeah, that was kind of BS. They took like a really bad road on responding to you. Like, it's like, I get it. They're trying to like, be like, it's not our fault.
I know, but it's like a big corporation and it was one book. It was like, you know, the least you could do was give us our money back, like the hundred and whatever dollars that we spent. But they weren't even going to do that. They were just like, well, you lost the paper, so we don't know what happened to it. You're bad.
I said, that is totally Planes, Trains, and Automobiles right there. Oh, like, boy. Like, you don't have the receipt.
Very rough. Very rough. But
hold on to your receipts, everybody.
Hold on to your receipts. Hey, guys, I wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about Undertone, which is a film that I saw last week. So it's been out a week, and I want to just ask Ryan, who went to see it, what his interpretation. Did you enjoy the film?
I did. I will say that the ending was a little lackluster, but...
Do you want to go a bit into spoilers?
I'll tiptoe around it.
Okay.
The best I can. Kept me... The entire film makes you feel like something is about to happen, but for the most part
nothing happens.
but it successfully kept me on edge. The music score was really creepy. I think it really worked for the film.
Yeah. I don't think it's a spoiler to say they use nursery rhymes in a really creepy way.
Very. And that would, you know, give me chills. I'm not even gonna lie, like, straight up, like, spook me out. It was like more, it felt to me like a psychological ride more than an actual possession. And that's the way I interpreted the film.
Which is funny because I interpreted it pretty much at face value that it was, in fact, a demon possession situation. And we both have very different views on how the movie ended.
I agree. And I think that's why my honest opinion, I give it 6 out of 10. It's above average. It's definitely worth the watch. Does it have rewatch value? I couldn't say so myself.
I don't know. It'll see if they have sequels to give more of the film, the film more context, you know, in hindsight, maybe I'd watch it again. But as it is, I'm kind of like you, like, oh, that was a good artsy horror film.
It was artsy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's not a problem. It's just a type of film.
No, exactly. And I could tell that when we were just getting into the movie, I'm like, okay, it's going to be one of these. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, your clue should have been A24. I love A24 because they do such crazy original stuff. You're not going to get the straight forward horror. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. They nailed it. You know, they did what they wanted to do. The ending wasn't terrible. I got some expectation, I guess, that didn't come to fruition.
Fair enough. Well, I went and saw a movie this weekend, and it did meet my expectations, man. I went and saw Project Hail Mary. And you remember when I read the book a year ago that I just talked and talked about how much I liked this book?
Yeah.
Dude, they did a pretty good job with the book-to-movie adaptation. So for those of you who don't know, Project Hail Mary is a new sci-fi film starring Ryan Gosling. And this is none of this that I'm going to say is a spoiler. While on a mission, which is called Project Hail Mary, so you assume it's a very dangerous, low succeed rate mission, he comes across an alien named Rocky, and they work together to resolve the goal of the movie. And I gotta be honest, man, their camaraderie was great. Like, you want to have like a buddy kind of back and forth. They nail it perfectly. And I know I mentioned this before, but it is a book written by Andy Weir, which is the guy who wrote The Martian. So he gets really sciencey in the book, right? They talk about how they use gravity on the spaceship, how he discovers each individual part of the mission and what they're doing, and they get some really detailed science stuff. Now, the movie did a really good job of putting that in montages that were really easily digestible. So if anyone out there is afraid that it's like that you're not going to be able to just sit back and enjoy the ride, that's not true. They do a very good job presenting this movie, and they don't cut out much from the book. It's a 2.5-hour movie.
Holy crap.
And that's actually not that long for something this epic.
Yeah, that's too old for me.
Yeah, I know you feel that way.
I got to use the bathroom.
Well, use the bathroom. Look, dude, there is an actual app that you can Google, and it tells you when to pee.
It doesn't do all of them. It doesn't do every movie. Like, it has, like, there has to be someone, you know, it's like a user base. So
okay,
they're
going to do Project Hail Mary. This is a huge movie.
It is
a blockbuster.
They will do it. They will do it. No, I want to see it so bad. My girlfriend and I are totally going to see it next when we get a sec.
Well, you know what? I definitely think you should. I want to tell you about a scene that was in the book and it was not in the movie. And this is not in any way a spoiler for the movie because none of this happens in the movie.
Okay.
Okay. So at some point, it tells you in the trailer that we are going on this mission to save Earth because the sun is dying. There's one very easy line in the trailer. Our sun is dying. So I'm not spoiling that.
And I love how he's just like, I'm not an astronaut.
Well, either were the space miners from Armageddon. And they did it, Ryan.
Gosh darn right. They were heroes.
Well, so one scene in the movie, to combat the world getting colder for obvious reasons, they need to figure out how to do something. So one of their ideas is they go to the best climatologist they could find, who's like, his whole job is just like, this is how we stop global warming. And they ask him like, okay, well, how do we start global warming? And he's like, oh, don't make me do that. And they're like, people are going to die. We got to save people. And he's like, oh, no. And he goes to the Arctic and tells them to blow up with nukes big chunks of the permafrost so it would let out all the carbon into the air and basically accelerate global warming, which buys humanity, I don't know what they say in the book, 10 or 20 more years. But it's this really interesting part in the book because the scientist is just like, you are literally asking me to do the exact opposite of what I spent my entire life studying how to do.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, but you're going to save people. And it's just, this character is only in that one scene. And it's not in the movie at all, not the character, not the event. And
I just imagined him just dragging his feet doing it. Just
I'm gonna go blow up the Arctic.
Guess. Like he's messed up, guy. He really messed up.
Yeah.
It was like, sad.
You keep going. You got this. Go on now.
But that's an example of something that really helped kind of show the peril of the events in the film. But obviously they had to leave out. Like you mentioned, 2.5 hours is long enough. You can't put everything in.
Oy.
But for the most part, they did a really good job adapting the story. Like, they didn't leave much out. And I...
What do you give it out of 10?
9?
No shit. That's...
9, yeah. And
what would you consider a 10 out of 10 and not Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s?
I love that you would say that. that is really tough because I would rate movies by genre, right? Like, I can give a 10
that's
out of
true.
10 sci-fi and I can give a 10 out of 10 comedy.
That's
but
true.
If I compare the two, I wouldn't say one is better than the other. For example,
that's true.
In my opinion, due to my age, because of when it came out and what it meant to me, Superbad would be a 10 out of 10 comedy. But I would not put Superbad next to what I would consider...
Like Interstellar.
Or like, well, Interstellar's not on my list, but sure. Like, that is the completely different films you can't judge on the same
yes.
level.
I was just trying to give an extreme.
Yeah, well, my film that is my absolute favorite most of the time, sometimes it changes, is SLC Punk, which is a Matthew Lillard film from 1998. And I guess you would call that a drama, but it's pretty funny.
I think in nostalgia, that's 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But I think as a movie, it's not. And I'm just being honest.
Fair enough.
You
fair
know
enough.
What I mean?
But I like it for a lot of levels. Like, as a filmmaker, I thought it was a very obtainable film. So when it came out, it was like, I can make something like that. You know what I mean? There's not a
yes.
spaceship. There's not a monster. So there's a lot of reasons why I really liked it. And then a little bit of life reflecting art or art reflecting life is at one point I lived in Salt Lake City, had blue spiky hair and was with my buddy with a black mohawk. And we did not realize it until we watched the movie again and kind of made fun of ourselves.
That's awesome.
Yeah, me and Jeff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then he died from an OD, like Heroin Bob. So it was a really weird roller coaster,
yeah.
man. So that movie kind of hits me pretty good.
Yeah, only posers die, bro. Only posers die.
Well, it's true, to be fair.
But yeah, no, I see what you mean. But all right, so a 9 out of 10 for Project Hail Mary from Joe?
Yeah, that is, it's a sci-fi epic that... I mean, I'm not just saying this, guys. You should see it on the big screen because, and I feel that way about most space movies because I think the spectacle of space and planets and all that stuff is best seen in big in front of you. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know I plug going to the movies every week, and I'm not going to lie, I'm going to continue to do that because I want the movies to survive because I don't want to live in a world where movie theaters don't exist. So, I urge you all to go to the movies. But that aside, it is a spectacle. Like, if you can see it on IMAX or laser projection or even Atmos theaters, like any of those, like any opportunity you have, I'm sure 4DX in LA and in some other places, probably Las Vegas, just see this movie on the biggest, coolest screen you can because it is a feast for the eyes. It transports you. It is a wonderful ride, but not just that. There are moments where you're holding your breath because you forget that you aren't in space. Like, you get sucked
hell yeah.
in.
Hell yeah. I like that.
Yeah, man.
I like that. No, and yeah, you do. Just going to the movies is, and I mean, nowadays, especially, right, with online and everything like that, it's hard to avoid a spoiler. So, I mean, nowadays, it like, if you like a movie, you gotta go. You gotta go. Like, don't rob yourself of that. You know what I mean? Be the like you can have it for yourself. Spoil free. For the first time, you get to see it and experience it and think about it exactly the way the people who created that art intended it, you know?
Absolutely. And it's just, I have not met anyone who read the book who didn't like this movie. And I've not met anyone who saw the movie and didn't at least enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So,
I mean, that's a pretty good ratio.
No, that's a great ratio. You know what I mean? And I even like going to the movies if it's a dud. Like, I will sit there and laugh at, like, a movie where you're not supposed to.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I still enjoy it. Like, I could never imagine walking out of a movie. I know people, like, do that. I'm there. Like, maybe it's just because I'm a cheap ass, but it's like, I've spent the money. I'm watching this thing. Like, I'm going to at least walk out of here with a story.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what I mean?
No, I do. I've only walked out of one movie in my entire life, and it was an Al Pacino, Robin Williams movie called Insomnia.
Oh my God, I really want to see that because I get clips from it every now and then. It's like one of the only Robin Williams films I haven't seen.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
With Al Pacino.
I did not like it back in the day. I walked out of that movie. It's the only movie I've ever walked out of. And it's funny because I'm sure it's a great movie. I'm pretty sure Christopher Nolan directed it. Like, I'm pretty sure it's a lot of people like this movie, but it's just everything I don't like about movies. I like escapism. I like fantasy. I like horror. I like sci-fi. I like comedy. And if it's like a crime drama or like a military movie, I lose interest real quick.
That's right. Yeah. And that's where you and I, like, it's so funny. We agree on so many things, but at the same time, we have different things. Cause I love a war movie. I love like a drama, like a crime, like a heist. I like that kind of shit.
Yeah. You know what? And I would say that we have like, what is it? The diagram where they have two big circles. Like we have a pretty good overlap,
yes.
But there is that section because then I've also gotten into some really, really weird shit that I know you can't watch because it's just too much for you. So, both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah. Honestly, guys, what would you guys like to tell us about a new movie that you want to see? Email us at earthlingentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And you know what? Just make sure to go to the movies. We have a friend of the show we'd like to tell you about right now.
Don't just go to the movies, experience them in Laser Ultra and the luxury of VIP seats exclusively at MJR Theaters. Our Laser Ultra auditoriums feature stunning 4K laser projection on a supersized screen and Dolby Atmos immersive sound that you can feel. Plus, you can relax in heated reclining VIP seats surrounded by your own personal privacy enclosure. Get your tickets to see the latest blockbusters in Laser Ultra at MJRTheaters.com.
Ha ha! Go to the movies.
Yeah,
I'm just good. That's just,
yeah, just go.
Just go. One last thing before we start our first, section here.
Okay.
Did you see the live action Moana trailer?
I saw some of it when I was at the theater last night.
Sure. It looks like, to me, like a shot for shot remake of that cartoon. And I just don't see the point.
And literally, I was just saying this to my girlfriend at the theater. I was just like, and it was like when we were not in the movies, I'm respectful. When we were out, at the concessions, it was on the TV. And I was just like, why did they do this?
It doesn't make sense.
Why?
It was like 10 years ago.
And I believe that's the same actress.
No, it's not. Definitely not.
It wasn't the same as Moana?
No, it's a different Moana for sure. The only returning person is
The Rock.
Is The Rock, as far as actors are concerned, that I know of. But everything was the same. Like, they were like, they went to the coconut island. They had the waves. They had the shot for shot. I'm just like, I've seen this movie. Like, why are we doing this?
I don't understand it. And it further boggles the mind on what Disney thinks their fans want. And we've seen them, stumble with Star Wars a bit. I can go ahead and say that. Everybody knows that. But I feel like this is just another fumble. Not everything needs a live action remake. They already screwed up with Snow White and Seven Dwarves. They screwed up with Little Mermaid. I feel like they screwed up. Like, it's just like, just stop. Come up with new crap again.
I agree that they definitely should go back to doing original films. I don't overly mind the live action remakes, but something like Maleficent, which is kind of it's a retelling of a story in a different way. Like, they went for a different angle. They had a different story. They didn't just make Snow White beat for beat.
It was like kind of like Wicked in
a little bit,
but with Maleficent.
Yeah. I could see that comparison.
You know what I mean?
But whereas like Moana just seems like the exact same movie. Like Lion King was like, here's the exact same movie with ugly real life looking lions. You know what I mean? I don't know. But the reason why they do it is simply because it makes a buttload of money. It's going to make so much money. Like Lilo and Stitch, which I also didn't really enjoy. That made like $1 billion.
I actually enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help myself. And I remember everybody like being so upset, being like, oh, she just gave up Lilo. I'm like, I have kids and I've been in divorce. Let me tell you, it's a miracle that they were able to keep contact after all that shit went down. Like, let alone she was able to pick where she got to go. Like, she got to go with the neighbor right there. The feds would have been like, mm-mm.
No, we're moving you to Kentucky.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah.
Grab a shovel.
That's awful.
That's too damn bad. like for real. Like, no, like,
I want to swim with the dolphins. Well, you got corn.
That's where I agreed with the Lilo and Stitch live action.
You thought
it
was more realistic?
It's like, if you're going to make it live action, yeah, make it more realistic. In the original one, they're just like, oh, that's fine.
Yeah, you like, guys will get along all right.
Literally blew the place to pieces and lost her multiple times. No, sure, you can keep her.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It would never happen.
It's fine. Child endangerment. We got this.
So you get live action, you get what you get. Welcome to real life.
Well, that's... Oh, that's funny. Well, let's talk about some spooky stuff. You found a crazy creature from way back when in Africa, right?
Yes, and all I could find, and there are eyewitness accounts, but egad, do they speak in an old-timey sort of way, and I decided not to edit it. So I'm going to do my best to read old-timey speaking. It's going to be fun.
Well, you were so articulate there. I'm sure it won't be an issue.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
So strap in, guys, and here is this week's
spooky stuff.
The Dingonek.
Sorry.
I love the name. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, European explorers ventured into the jungles of West Africa and found dozens of undiscovered species, like the bongo and the okapi. Along with the confirmed species, they also brought back tales of bizarre beasts that they learned only through African legends or brief glimpses along the shores of steamy jungle rivers. There are dozens of such creatures, but the Dingonek takes the prize as the weirdest of them.
Ah, yes. Nothing weirder than a dingleneck.
Dingleneck. Called the jungle walrus.
Ah.
Big game hunter Edgar Beecher Bronson described the dingleneck as 14 or 15 feet long, head big of that of a lioness, but shaped and marked like a leopard. Two long white fangs sticking down straight out of its upper jaw, back broad as a hippo, scaled like an armadillo, but colored and marked like a leopard.
Not too bad of an ass either.
And a broad fin tail. Egad! But he was a hideous old haunter of a nightmare, was that beast fish. Blast that blighter's fangs, but they looked long enough to go clean through a man. A shot with a .303 caliber rifle only angered it. See, I was able to do that.
Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, so that's one out of what, five?
There's a few.
All right. Good luck.
So it is said to be a carnivore that can choose to hunt or devour nearly whatever it wants, save for elephants. This is because of having tusks that are over a meter long and being so large, ferocious, and aggressive that even large bull hippos fall prey to it.
I gotta be honest though, having a large tusk, I can't imagine that would be helpful. Because in my head, you use smaller teeth to chew. If you have a large tusk, sure, you might be able to kill your predator, but then it's gonna be on your tooth like a shish kebab, right? Like, yeah, they just have like this impaled thing go, right through my chest!
Can you just get out of there after real quick?
Too much?
Got a little bit of something in my teeth, huh?
I mean, I guess maybe they have really strong tongues. Like, that guy could tie a cherry knot just like easily, but just knocks the guy off his tooth.
Why am I reminded of Dragonheart?
When he's in the because of Boa. Because Bowen into the dragon's mouth.
Yes.
Oh, sure, Edgar. Oh, Edgar. Oh, that's been in my mouth for weeks.
He pulls the skeleton out.
Oh, my God, guys. Watch Dragonheart. Do you know how many dragon hearts they made?
Six.
Five.
Okay, so that was close.
Yeah, so they had Dragonheart. Then they had Dragonheart and New Beginning, which was expected into a sequel. Then they had Dragonheart 3. Then they had Dragonheart Search for the Heartfire. And then they had Dragonheart 4 Vengeance. By the end of the fourth one, they stopped wanting to CGI the dragon, so they made the dragon be able to turn into a mouse. I'm not kidding. It was the most, like, cheap thing I've ever seen in my life. But Helen Bonham Carter played the dragon.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am resting my head on my microphone.
This is what I'm good at. This is my superpower. You don't judge. Now talk about your, like, beasts.
So back to the dingleneck.
Dingleneck.
How it would presumably do this, meaning getting a large hippo, is by ambushing hippos, by sneaking up on them, and then sinking its meter-long tusks into the thick skin of the hippo as if it were just jelly.
Fair enough.
The sole description of this creature occurs in big game hunter Edgar Beecher Bronson's 1910 memoir, In Closed Territory. In the memoir, Bronson recounts a campsite discussion involving the creature with fellow big game hunter John Alfred Jordan. After musing about the okapi, Bronson reports that Jordan said the following.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but at first I thought you said with fellow big gay hunter, and I was just like, like, that is a weird thing to have like a specific note about that. Like, what does that have to do with the story?
Big gay hunter.
And then I'm like, oh, big gay, oh, game. Yeah.
Big sorry. Gay game.
My bad.
There's the infernal horror of the reptilian bounder that comes up on the Magori River out of the lake the Lambwa have christened Dinganet. According to Bronson, Jordan claims he encountered the beast with his hunting party. One member of the party, Matea, claims to have seen it twice, yet Bronson expressed skepticism. Jordan says he encountered the creature while heading to the Magori when, presently I heard the bush smashing up and raced my guide wide up. And sorry, it's a weird. Let me do this again.
Yeah, it's weird.
Presently, I heard the bush smashing and up raced my guide wide-eyed and gray. With the report that they had seen a frightful strange beast on the riverbank, which at sight of them had plunged into the water. As they described it, some sort of cross between a sea serpent, a leopard, and a whale. Thinking they had gone crazy or were pulling my leg, I told them I'd believe them if they could show me, but not before. After a long discussion among themselves, back they finally ventured, returning in a half hour to say it lay full length, exposed in on the water in midstream. Jordan hurried to the Magori and saw the creature as described. He described it as follows. Holy saints, but he was a sight 14 or 15 feet long. Head big of that as a lioness, but shaped and marked like a leopard. Two long white fangs sticking down straight its upper jaw. Back broad as a hippo, scaled like an armadillo, but colored like... Oh, I already said that before.
He said the same shit.
That's right. He said the same shit. But colored, marked like a leopard, and with a big fin tail, with slow, lazy swishes of which he was easily holding himself level in the swift current, headed upstream. Egad, but he was a hideous old haunter of a nightmare. So I already said that one. So that made you want an aeroplane to feel safe from him. I love that. Yeah. That's spelled that way.
I want to get the hell out of here.
For a while he lay upstream from me, I had brought down the riverbank precisely where he had taken water. And there all about me in the soft mud and loam were the imprints of feet wide a diameter as a hippo's, but clawed like a reptile's. Feet you know you could carry him ashore and claws that could belly well sure no man could ever get loose from once they had nipped him. That was a hard one to read.
That was good.
Thank you.
Oh, hold on. Was it a little
like Betty. Bully.
Well done. I'm glad we have an applause button. I forget to press it sometimes.
It makes me feel very appreciated. So Jordan notes that its fangs appeared long enough to go clean through a man. And he described as he sat and waited to watch the creature. In time, he feared the creature might move and see him. And he fired his .303 rifle behind his leopard ear. The creature sprang out of the water, and Jordan sprinted into the bush in terror. In time...
It was just minding its own business. Why, like, are you messing with it?
It's coming right for us!
Yeah. It's like doing a backstroke, just chilling, enjoying its life. Just like shoot at it.
Blowing like little like water geysers, like, yeah. Like out of a cartoon.
Like, we don't realize, but in animal language, like, everybody's singing and dancing. It's a fucking Disney show. And then this guy comes up and tries to shoot him.
Yep.
Bastard.
Yep. In time, Jordan calmed and listened for the beast as his party ran deeper into the bush. Jordan says that he could not recall seeing the beast's legs because he was fixated on escaping and ponders how a .303 round was unable to stop the animal from a distance of 10 yards.
Because he didn't want to admit he's a shitty shot.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Jordan says that although he searched for the beast along shorelines and bodies of water over several miles for 2 days after the encounter, he never again encountered the beast nor its tracks. According to Bronson, Jordan then asked him to inquire with his hunting party about what they had witnessed. Through an interpreter, Bronson claims that they are providing nearly identical descriptions of the beast. Bronson follows this account by noting that when he visited Uganda in November last, he met with ex-collector James Martin, who told him that a great water serpent or reptile was seen on or near the north shore of the lake, which was worshipped by the natives, who believed its coming a harbinger of heavy crops and large increase of their flocks and herds. Finally, Bronson says that.
Wait, hold on. I have a scientific reason why that might be.
Okay.
If it's a big like river creature, then presumably it would be around when there's deep water. So if there's a lot of rain and deep water, then it comes around. They see it and they're like, oh, our crops are going to grow. And it's because the soil is more hydrated.
That's possible. Or that they need to sacrifice people to it.
Oh, no, because I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
Ancient spirits.
Thank you.
Kill the creature. You got it. All right.
So, finally, Bronson says that, again, in December, while dining with Senior Deputy Commissioner C.W. Hobley, CMG, at his residence in Nairobi.
That is that dude boasting.
He has one hell of a name.
Like, I sat down with Sir Longname.
That's right. C.W. Hobley, CMG, at his residence in Nairobi. The very night before starting on this safari, in speaking of the origin of the sleeping sickness, Mr. Hobley told me that Baganda, Wasoga, and Kavirondo of the north shore of the lake had, from time immemorial, sacrificed burnt offerings of cattle and sheep to a lake reptile of great size and terrible appearance that they called Laquata, which occasionally appeared along or near the shore, that since the last coming of Laquata was just shortly before the first outbreak of the sleeping sickness. The natives firmly believed that Muzungu have killed Laquata with the purpose and as a means of making them victims of the dread plague. Of the existence in the lake of such an unclassed reptile, Mr. Hobley considered there was no question.
That is interesting. Although they made it sound really sinister. They're like, they gave him offerings of burnt and steak?
So they cooked him some steak.
They made a roast. Like, why is that sound so evil?
Oh, it's a pork chop. Thank you.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm just saying. It's like Betty White at the end of Lake Placid, where she's just giving the baby crocodiles food.
Oh, my God.
Here you go. Oh, it's so cute.
And then she tells the cop, if I had a dick, this is the time I would tell you to suck it.
Oh, man. Betty White was amazing in that movie.
Hell yeah, she was. That was sort of...
I know that's a weird callback, but I'm just saying.
I love Lake Placid. That movie's amazing.
Do you know how many of those they made?
How many?
It's fine. I won't do it. Go
do it. No. Do it. Do it.
Here's the thing. I don't actually remember. I know it was Lake Placid 1, 2, and 3. And then I think they had Lake Placid Legacy. And I know they had Lake Placid versus Anaconda. So I might be missing one, but I think 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll believe you, Joe. Speaking of believing, do you believe in this cryptid this week? The Dinganek.
I mean, personally, why not? It sounds like there was enough reports that it probably could have existed. Is it a misidentification? Maybe. But it's just as likely that, like, it was an animal that was very few of its kind left and by now could be dead.
I agree with that. Giant sloths
existed when humans were still walking around stuff.
You know that there are people...
It was like 10,000 years ago.
Forrest Gallant, he's a researcher that I like. He does a lot of research on trying to find animals that are thought to be extinct. He truly believes that they exist somewhere, like in the Congo, like in deep rainforest.
What, giant sloths or these things?
Yes. No, giant sloths. But no, not. If I could ask him about the Dinganek.
Well, I mean, Tasmanian tiger, it was a real animal. And then people were like, oh, it doesn't exist. It's a myth because it went extinct. And then I think recently they found one or like having a video of one. So Tasmanian tiger is, you know, kind of like a foxy looking kind of animal, but it could open its jaw almost like 90 degrees.
That's crazy.
It could open its mouth like a snake.
And we're discovering new species all the time. And
the coelacanth, we thought that was extinct.
Yep. And we keep finding them. So chances are a megafauna, I guess you would call this, like a very large, carnivore it could possibly exist.
Well, if it exists anywhere, it's going to be where humans aren't. So the water is a completely possible place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I give credibility to the fact that these guys are explorers, and these footprints that he saw, he had never seen before. He could not... That's why he's like, it's almost like an elephant, but with claws.
I mean, yeah, you assume this is what he does. So
right.
You know.
So yeah, no, that's why I just was like, screw it. I'm just going to go with his eyewitness account. because it seems pretty legit. And he was researching this for quite some time, and he was very respected.
Totally. Yeah. So, hey, guys, listeners, if you think the Dingleberry exists, I'm sorry, what is it?
The Dingleneck.
The Dingleberry. If you think it exists, feel free to hit us up at earthlinkentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com.
We would love to hear from you.
Let's do some pop culture.
Yeah.
The Earth Pop Report, talking about everything to do with Earth pop culture.
Woo! Here we go.
Take my hand, my friends, as I lead you into the pop culture section of this podcast known as Earthling Entertainment. Hi, guys.
Hey, what's good? Yeah, I told you to start it. You know what, Ryan? You nailed it.
I did it.
A+.
Yes.
All right, guys. We got a couple things to talk about today in the pop culture world, and we'll just jump right in. So, Kirsten Dunst, you know, the original Mary Jane from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, she has been cast in Minecraft 2. And I'm going to pass this over to Ryan because I never saw Minecraft and I don't have kids who play Minecraft, but Ryan has more information than me on this. So, Ryan, do you think Kirsten Dunst would do a good job in Minecraft 2?
I feel like this is a trick question. Kirsten Dunst is an absolute gem. From Small Soldiers to Spider-Man. Damn, you know what I'm saying? No, honestly, I am excited for it because I feel like with the Minecraft movie, it really gave a chance for these actors to really shine. Like Jason Momoa as his character was incredible. He was hilarious. It was fun. It was
I couldn't get over the bangs, and I just saw the marketing, though.
It was great. It was great. And, no, the first film was wonderful, and I know that the second film is going to be great. My kids love these films, so...
Well, it's definitely, like, printing money. It is, like, one of the most popular games in the world. So, someone comes to you, and they're like, hey, you want to do the Minecraft movie? Why wouldn't you say yes?
I mean, yeah. And, I couldn't say how excited I am for Kirsten to get this role. This is a huge deal for her.
I mean, everyone likes a hit movie. It doesn't look bad on your resume to say my last movie made $800 million.
And there's no way, like, this isn't going to be, I think, as crazy as the first one. You know what I mean? But, like, when it comes to reception, where the whole audience were losing their minds and, like, at the chicken jockey. But, you know, but I feel like it's still going to have the fan base. Everyone's going to come and see it. You know, I really hope it does well. But like I said, congratulations to Kirsten for getting this. That's awesome. Because what has she really been doing?
Oh, she's done a lot. She's done a lot. Just not stuff you watch. But I mean, it's not like she just recently did the movie Roofman with Channing Tatum. That was pretty good. Okay. Just watched that the other day.
Okay.
I think it's funny because you think of all this started because the Lego movie, in my opinion, right? They made a Lego movie and then it actually was good. And then they tried to make another Lego movie and it didn't do so well. And that kind of is the way it goes. Frozen 1, great. Frozen 2?
Was the worst.
I mean, it still made its money, but yeah, it wasn't
great. I hate that movie.
I'd argue the same for Moana 1 and 2. The first one was good and the second one was like,
That's the thing. I didn't even bother watching the second one because I saw enough about it and I'm like, nope. I'm not doing it.
So you think about Minecraft 2, and it's like, I don't know if it's going to be as popular, but it's probably going to make a good amount of money. You know what it reminds me of is after the Lego movie, they tried to do it with like everything, right? We had the Emoji movie.
Which was terrible.
It was, but do you remember the Playmobil movie?
No, but I remember the Angry Birds movie.
But that actually did well and got a sequel. And the third one's coming out this year, so that's a bad example.
I actually liked Angry Birds.
Well, the Playmobil movie starred Daniel Radcliffe, and you could tell, like, everyone in that's like, this is going to be the next Lego movie, and no one ever heard of it, and it just disappeared. You can find it, but, like, have you heard of it?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Right. Anyways, Kirsten Dunst is in Minecraft 2.
Hooray!
Hooray! Number two on my thing is Stranger Things. So, much like most Netflix shows, they usually don't get a physical media release. Now, Stranger Things, because it was popular when it first came out, actually did. They released season 1 and season 2 as a Target exclusive physical media set.
Smart.
And I got them both. But then I kept waiting for season 3, 4, and they never came out. I ended up having to buy bootleg versions of them, which I didn't know they were bootleg versions of them. I thought they were different regions. I bought them from eBay, and you get them, and it's clearly printed discs, and you're like, oh... Anywho, they're actually releasing the entire series, finally. So that's the thing. I guess they released it the first two seasons, and when they decided they were actually going to like finish the show, they're like, we'll wait till it's done and do a massive box set. And massive box set Indeed. It is going to be a 25-disc complete series with all kinds of stuff that you get in a box set. You could pre-order it March 19th. So already you could pre-order it. But it comes out July 28th. And I looked it up and it looked like it's going to be like about $200.
I was going to, honestly, that's cheaper than I thought. Well, I thought it was going to be more.
Yeah, it pisses me off because I'm going to buy it. Like, well, I have all the Stranger Things stuff. I love Stranger Things.
That's less than $10 a disc.
But what's on the disc? There's only 8 episodes or 9 episodes a season. Why do we need 25 discs? What else could they possibly put on these discs?
Stranger Things could be put on them.
Oh. I don't know, guys. I'm not going to lie. I'm a physical media guy. Simply, there's a couple reasons. One, sometimes your internet goes out, but you still have power. And in those unique times, having physical media is helpful. Also, with all the licensing agreements that happen with streaming sites, even if you buy a movie digitally, it can be removed.
And they can edit. They can edit that movie.
And change it.
That's distributed. And then all of a sudden, yeah, your movie might be a little different.
It's funny that all our examples are Disney movies, but it's because we have young children. But Lilo and Stitch, the cartoon, had Lilo hide in a dryer in the original version.
Yeah.
And then in this new version, it's like a weird pizza box.
It's like, yeah, it's like a pizza box in front of like a cabinet or yeah, something.
It's silly.
To be fair, they pulled it off.
I mean, you're not going to notice unless you know, I guess.
And I guess in the original one, it was like around 9/11 and Stitch stole a plane. And then they changed it into the spaceship. That was another thing that happened.
All right, I could see that.
Yeah, they were like, okay, we can't have him stealing a plane.
You know what the weirdest thing about 9/11 is? That first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire was coming out, and they had a teaser trailer for Spider-Man where he created a nest in between the two towers, like a hammock, and laid in it. And it was only the teaser trailer, because it was pretty early before the movie came out. Well, I saw the teaser trailer, too. And, then the two towers happened, and... Well, let's just say they buried that as best they could.
I mean, yeah, you know, Spidey wasn't there to save the day.
Oh, man, Marvel and DC did a lot of really cool things during 9/11. They had, like, all the superheroes sitting there, like, helping the firefighters and stuff. And they were really, like, you know, pro-American heroes and stuff. Because that was the thing back then. Everyone was like, let's come together. Wouldn't that be nice? But,
right now.
But it was funny because there was this little kid and he was like, I don't know if it was Captain America or Spider-Man or Superman, but he walks up and he's like, my dad died. Like, why didn't you save him? And the superhero, like, he falls down to his knees and he's like, we can't see everything. We didn't see this coming. And it was like, oh, dark, chilling.
God damn, I didn't see that thing.
I know. How do we get on 9/11? Buy Stranger Things 25.
Sorry.
Buy Stranger Things 25 disc if you want to see it.
You said you'd never forget.
That is rough. Anywho,
I had a rough day at work.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, speaking of things I'll never forget about the films of John Carpenter. Are you a fan of John Carpenter at all?
The Thing.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. But what about some of the lesser known stuff?
What?
I don't know. They Live. None of this stuff's really lesser known, to be honest.
I was going to say, yeah, I know They Live.
Well, he's doing his first ever comic book. It's going to be titled Cathedral, and it's coming out in August. So if you're a fan of John Carpenter and what he does, here you go, man. His first graphic novel.
Well, dude, good for him. Doing something a little different, branching out.
Well, you know, I get it. It, you know, graphic novel, and I've never financed a comic, so I don't know this is a fact. But I assume with pretty great certainty that it's way cheaper to make a comic book than it is a movie. So, if you have a great idea for a film, turn it into a comic. Why not?
Oi.
You gotta find an artist. I mean, sure, you gotta pay them, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited. I do read comics, and I will definitely check out Cathedral by John Carpenter coming out in August.
Sounds good.
All right, so back to Stranger Things. I know what you're thinking. This should have went with the last Stranger Things article, but I wanted to separate them because it is two different shows and two different things, Ryan, okay?
And I won't take your judging.
I won't take your judging. Good offspring.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So long story short, Stranger Things, Tales of 85 is an animated series that's going to take place between season, I believe, 2 and 3. And it has all new voice actors, but the same characters. And so that's coming out. Well, it looks like it's getting a one-day theatrical release. So the first two episodes are going to play on August 18th at select AMC theaters. And I get it. I get it. Stranger Things is a big deal. But the Stranger Things finale being in theaters made sense to me. Doctor Who, which was a well-established show when they were doing it, having the premiere of the next season in theaters, that makes sense to me. Game of Thrones doing it, that makes sense to me. This is a new show. What makes them think anyone's going to come out and see this in theaters? I'm not saying it won't. I'm saying I don't know if it will.
You're saying it's a bold move.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a bold move.
It's just, you're going to see the first two episodes of an animated cartoon. So we assume what? This is an hour long show or this is a half hour show? Either way, I don't know.
It has to be unprecedented. Like, how often does something brand new, all of a sudden it's like, by the way, it's in theaters, like the show. Like, that's...
I mean, I don't think it's happened very often, but it just seems like a weird move. Who knows if it'll work? I'm going to definitely see the show, but I don't think I'm going to check it out in theaters. Partially because there's not an AMC by me, and then also because, you know, I'll just wait for Netflix. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
I do want to support... It's funny, because I want to support theaters, Ryan, and that's all I really care about is going to see things in theaters. But AMC is not my favorite chain.
They haven't updated.
You know, if it was playing anywhere else, I might be more likely to see it, is all I'm saying.
Last time I went to AMC was for Deadpool and Wolverine, and I went because it was, like, literally the, like, I didn't go to the midnight showings, right? So, but I went that day because I was like, oh, I'll get the funny popcorn bucket. All sold out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was literally the first day. Like, I had just missed the midnight showing, and everybody... And then of course now, you know, my algorithm starts sending me like videos of it, and it's all these content creators being like, oh, I made sure to get up and be there as soon as they were open. I'm not seeing the movie till 2 days from now, but I made sure to get my popcorn bucket. I'm like,
you're the reason.
I was like, you jerks. Like, the no.
I made sure to buy 12 of them.
That's what I'm saying. No. If you're gonna, if I want the stupid little thing, if I want the stupid popcorn bucket, I should be seeing the movie. Like, you shouldn't just be able to walk in and be like, I'm buying that popcorn bucket and then turn around and leave. No, shenanigans.
I do agree that you should, like, have a ticket to the movie at least. If you don't want to see it, that's fine, but you should buy a ticket at least. You should have to show your ticket for that movie to buy the popcorn bucket.
I agree. Yeah. No, it made me upset. Like, because I wanted the stupid Wolverine, you know, the suggestive pose.
No, I get it. The last popcorn bucket I bought was from Ghostbusters Afterlife. So a few years ago, and I still have it up on my shelf, and I love that thing. If you open it up, because, you know, it's a popcorn bucket, it's full of all the extra pieces to the action figures I have on display. So the extra hands or heads or weapons.
Really?
It's just full of that crap up there. And until that gets full, I don't think I need another popcorn bucket.
When I took my kids to see the new SpongeBob movie, I got them the popcorn bucket, which is a treasure chest.
Oh, yeah?
It's awesome.
All right, that is pretty cool. It's like some movies lend themselves to a popcorn bucket very well, and then others do not make sense. Like, because I go to MJR all the time. I went to MJR, and they had the popcorn bucket for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour.
Okay.
And it was like one of those McDonald's buckets that were just kind of a plastic bucket with, like, printed, like, Taylor Swift on it. And I was just like... Oh, like, you guys aren't even going to try. Like, give me like a Taylor Swift busk where she opens up her,
with,
like,
her
head.
Mouth open.
Yeah, or something like silly. Yeah, you, like, crack open the head like like from the top from, what is it? God, Nightmare Before Christmas. The guy with the brain.
Oh, that would be perfect. Dr. Finkelstein.
Right. Well, you take off Dr. Finkelstein's head. There we go. Popcorn.
Right. We could have looked into, and that's what's been in her head all along, was your popcorn.
I'm not talking crap. I'm talking about a popcorn button. You're talking crap, and that's fine. My wife will get very mad at me if I talk crap. She is a wonderful artist and a treasure, Ryan. Anyways. Number five. So, did you ever see Wonder Man? I don't think you probably did.
No.
All right, so Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3 played Trevor Slattery, and also known as the Mandarin. They brought him back in a Shang-Chi movie, and that was really good. Well, they brought him back in Wonder Man, and if you don't know the backstory, that character is an actor. So he goes to Hollywood, and he's trying to be an actor, and he befriends another man who is trying to go out for the role of Wonder Man. And it is an industry show. Like, it's a show about trying to make it in the film industry. So me and my wife loved it. Absolutely. Great film. It's supposed to be a limited series. They weren't even going to have a season two. And it looks like it has been renewed for season two because everyone, not just me, seems to think it is a great show.
Nice.
You should give it a watch.
No, yeah, I've never even heard of it. Is that the correct spelling that we got here?
Yeah, Wonder Man.
So with a U, Wonder Man.
Probably not. I probably misspelt it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to call you out, but I was just like, I'm trying to, because I'm like, I've never heard of it.
Fair enough. No, Wonder Man is basically, he was part of the West Coast Avengers in the comics. He was reimagined in this show as an actor who is going out for the role of Wonder Man, which is a superhero in the Marvel Universe films, not in real life. Do you know what I mean?
Like, okay.
their version of a superhero in their movie. Huh. But great, great show. There's never a superhero fight in the whole thing. There's no real villain in the whole thing. And it is the best Marvel Disney Plus show that they've come out with since WandaVision.
Huh.
It's better, in my opinion.
Better than Loki?
In my opinion, yes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But it's a very different kind of show. It is a fun drama comedy about someone trying to make it in the film industry if the film industry existed in the Marvel Universe. So
that is kind of cool.
It's this really weird take. Josh Gad plays in the show as himself. And
excellent.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Do you remember the bad guy from the first Matrix movie? He was also in the Daredevil movie. Is like Joe Pantione or something like that.
You mean the one who sold them out? Like,
yes,
their friend?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The
like,
bald
the,
guy?
Like, the, yeah, where he's like, the Matrix is going to tell me this steak tastes like blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that guy.
That is exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, he is in the Wonder Man show playing himself as well.
No way. That's awesome.
It's really weird, man.
That's good stuff.
So if you guys are a fan of Wonder Man, or if you've never seen it and are interested in the way I've described it, definitely check it out, because there's going to be a season two. There's more to the story, which I'm pretty happy about.
Wonderful.
And that brings us to agenda number 6. Ryan, you've been a kind of a fan of Star Trek, right?
Yeah, more of the older stuff.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, all the new stuff, what's known as Modern Trek, done by Paramount Plus, would be basically Star Trek Beyond. They had a movie called Star Trek Section 9. I know they had a show called Lower Decks, which was animated, I liked very much. Strange New Worlds. And they also have their new show, Star Trek Starfleet Academy. Well, this show was kind of, it was a different take. They wanted to basically do like Star Trek, The College Years. It's a YA show. And apparently it hasn't really found its audience, despite having a lot of big name stars in it. And it has a huge budget. But that is where the problem actually lies. When you're a sci-fi show that has a huge budget and you haven't gained the audience you need, you know, that's pretty much the end of your show. It looks like season 2 will be the end of Star Trek Starfleet Academy. One thing is they did cancel the show mid-production, so they're not going to end on like a cliffhanger. It's going to be, for all intents and purposes, every storyline is going to be kind of closed off for the most part. So if you're a fan of this show, don't be too sad, because it's not like you're not going to get any resolution. But that being said, it will not be continuing.
Well, I mean, that's a bummer, because I know Star Trek fans are hardcore, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, where I'm watching most of everything that Star Wars is putting out, I'll admit I've been flacking lately. I feel like this is probably going to touch on a lot more of the lore, right? Like, I'm sure Star Trek fans want to see where they kind of started out to get to being captain, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. But it's kind of funny, because Starfleet Academy actually is the latest show in the timeline. So it's all new characters for the most part. It's like the next generation of future Star Trek guys.
Right. So, like, they would like to see how Starfleet handles their academy, how they teach these, you know, people
I agree, but apparently we're wrong. Like, oh. I don't know, man, it didn't go over too well. A lot of people were pissed off. I didn't watch a show, so I'm not judging, but a lot of people didn't like how it took a progressive view, which is kind of funny, because most Star Trek takes a progressive view.
I was going to say that.
That's
like
kind of what Star Trek does.
Quite literally, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But hey, I am glad that it's going to get a some kind of resolution with the end of season 2, because the worst thing ever is when a show gets canceled on a cliffhanger. Some of the worst are My Name is Earl, season 4 ended on a huge cliffhanger. The 4400 season 4 ended on a huge cliffhanger. I don't like ending on a huge cliffhanger. I feel like if I was ever to run a show, and this might be very naive to say because I don't know if this is ever something that can be negotiated, but I feel like if I ever am a showrunner, which hopefully, you know, I will be, I would write in my contract that, like, if we get canceled, I don't care if we get canceled after 2 episodes. I don't care if we get canceled after 100 episodes. Whenever we get canceled, we get 1 episode to wrap it up. Like, I would write it in my contract. You know, even if
I feel like that's smart.
Even if it feels rushed and you have to, like, literally wrap everything up by making 1 episode like a montage to solve everything, give resolution to your people.
I mean, that seems only fair, right? Because otherwise you're just putting out something without an ending, and you wouldn't even want that as a person, you know, producing this or whatever, you know, paying for it or whatever, having it on your platform. You would want them to at least finish the story as best they could.
Well, if you're a streamer, you don't really give a crap because you only want people to join your streaming site. So you only care about those initial streamers. Once you got them, you're not worried about continuing a show. That's why Netflix ends everything after like 3 seasons.
And this is why we're in a sad place.
This is why we're in a sad place. But there you go, guys. Star Trek, Starfleet Academy will be ending. And hopefully we'll get more new Star Trek, you know, to come, because it's a huge franchise. And Paramount Plus, Paramount in general, they're buying Warner Brothers, which means they're inheriting something like $79 billion in debt, and they're going to be in the red. So they're going to be basically struggling to stay alive. And Paramount's one of their biggest franchises is Star Trek. So they're going to keep making Star Trek. So don't worry if you're just a fan of Star Trek, we'll get more.
Live long and prosper as long as you make us money.
Huzzah! Speaking of making money, number 7, back to Project Hail Mary. Its early projections basically said it was going to make about $40 million on its opening weekend. And then they did some exclusive fan screenings, and then people were like, oh, it's going to do better. We're thinking it's going to make around $70 million. Well, you know what? It did even better than that. On its opening weekend, it blew away projected projections to be $80 million debut.
Gosh, dang.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal because this is Amazon MGM and they needed a good win. And they're saying that they're committing to doing theatrical releases. So having a big hit like that is a big deal. And it's also the biggest hit of the year so far.
And for the rock alien people, this is a big thing for you guys. We are ready for you. Come on over. Ryan Gosling has already wooed you as he has wooed us all.
Yeah, ever since the Notebook, our hearts just melt.
We knew it. We knew it.
Yeah, and for all the dudes, ever since Driver, we're just like badass.
What do you want?
Or was we it Drive? Want was it you. Driver or Drive?
I don't know.
Ryan Gosling actually is a pretty good actor. Do you know, I have been a fan of him for a long time, and it's going to surprise you. Well, you know what? It won't surprise you. Ryan, do you know when I started liking Ryan Gosling and why I thought he was a good actor?
When was that, Joe?
When he did a show back in the 90s called Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
You know, Neve Campbell was also in Are You Afraid of the Dark? Just saying.
And a lot of other people.
Yeah. Are You Afraid of the Dark is awesome.
Are You Afraid of the Dark? Yeah, Are You Afraid of the Dark was great. Submitted for the approval of the Midnight Society. I call this story
the tale of me telling you shit about Earth pop culture.
Oh.
Unrelated to anything, I just started rewatching the 90s Outer Limits because I found out that it was on Amazon Prime. That's some good stuff.
Okay.
Number 8. So, Pixar announced a little bit ago that they were doing The Incredibles 3 and Lilo and Stitch 2 because, you know, money. And we now have some release dates. So it looks like The Incredibles 3 is going to hit theaters on June 16th, 2028.
The second one was awesome, so I hope this one's really good.
You know what's funny? The second one's completely... I don't remember it. I saw the first one. I liked it. I can't really... I know it had more to focus on...
The family and the baby.
And the way, yeah. Hmm.
The whole scene with Edna and the baby is amazing. That's like the best part of the movie.
I may have only seen it once. I have no memory of this.
It's really good.
Well, what about, you said you liked the live action Lilo and Stitch, right?
I did.
Well, that second film is coming out May 26, 2028.
Good, good. Honestly, I was laughing my ass off in the theater watching it. It was funny. Like, if you just don't take the time to frickin' nitpick everything to exactly how you would do it if it was your movie...
Well, that's the kind of the same of all movies.
You'll enjoy it.
I don't know. I'm sure it'll make $1 billion.
I'm sure it'll do pretty dang good.
Yeah,
pretty
sure dang good. Well, unfortunately, guys, we've come to that time in the show where we have to occasionally say goodbye to celebrities or other people that we've admired their work throughout their career and are no longer with us. And
Raise your horns.
I'm going to ask Ryan to take on this one here. He's going to jump in and cover this. We have looks like five people that we'd like to honor today.
We're going to go ahead and start off with Carrie Ann Fleming, age 51. She died of breast cancer. She's known for iZombie, Supernatural, Smallville, and The L Word. Canadian actress known for many television appearances, especially in sci-fi, supernatural, and horror shows.
Which is why we're honoring her today, because obviously that is our bread and butter. That is the things we cover. I do remember her from specifically iZombie and Supernatural, and I don't really have much to say. I enjoyed her for what she did, and it's just sad to hear anyone go that young. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
51's too young.
Because I always recognized her.
Breast cancer, dude.
Any kind of cancer is just awful.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's why those ribbons are around, man. We gotta be aware. We gotta figure this crap out.
Hopefully, eventually they will. I mean, they say AIDS is pretty much being phased out. In our part of the world, not everywhere.
So here we go. Let's nail this whole, you know, cancer thing. My God. So, okay, rest in peace, Carrie Ann Fleming. So that brings us to Nicholas Brendan, age 54. Cause of death was natural causes following ongoing health issues. He's known for playing Xander Harris on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. A fan favorite character on the long-running cult supernatural series, and appeared in several films and TV shows after Buffy.
That's right. Now, this guy, it's a little bit of a sad story, because he never really felt like he got his due. Sarah Michelle Gellar shared a quote, and I'm not going to get the quote exactly right because I don't have it.
Just say, yeah.
But basically, she was quoting him when he said, "You'll never know how hard it is to be next to the spotlight, but never be able to step in." Like that, you know what I mean? Like he was there. He had a career, and to some people, that would just be amazing enough. But like, he never got called up to the big leagues. You know what I mean? Like in his mind, he was a minor league player that never got to, you know, do the World Series.
And that's just, you know, that's just something that comes with this industry, right? Like we see it more often than not. Well, honestly, it's a really hard thing.
I mean, the bottom line is there's only so many stars and there's many other players. You know what I mean? Like the guy who worked as a gaffer his whole life and has been on Academy Award winning movies never gets thought of or mentioned, and that film wouldn't exist without him. There's always someone. And so this one was a bit of a sad story. He had some substance abuse problems in the early 2000s and got in a little bit of trouble. And he died of heart issues. They say are caused from natural causes, but with his earlier activities, that may have something to do with it. But, you know, we'll never know. In any case, it's sad to see someone go that young.
And he was very talented. Yes, rest in peace, Nicholas Brendan. So that brings us to something I didn't think that we would ever cover on this, because I just assumed he was going to be eternal and eventually become some kind of god.
sure. But, live forever.
But evidently, death caught a case of Chuck Norris, age 86. Cause of death was a medical emergency. The exact cause is not publicly released yet. Obviously known for Walker, Texas Ranger, Delta Force, Missing in Action, martial arts champion, and pop culture icon, and the host of all the best jokes, such as when Chuck Norris does a push-up, he doesn't push himself up, he pushes the earth down.
Yes, do you know under Chuck Norris's beard, there's not a chin, just another fist.
You know he doesn't cut his grass, he dares it to grow.
Exactly.
He visited the Virgin Islands once. You know, they're just called the Islands now.
I didn't hear that one. That was a good one.
So before acting, he was world champion martial artist and later became one of the most recognizable action stars of the 1980s and 1990s, as well as a major internet meme figure.
That's right. Now, I do have something small to say about this. A little bit of a soapbox I'm just going to get on real quick. I got some flack for basically saying, you know, rest in peace, Chuck Norris, on our Instagram. And people got very upset because a lot of people are not able to separate the art from the artist. And I do get that. I understand where you're coming from. And I am the first person to recognize Chuck Norris, towards the end of his life, got a little ridiculous when it came to religion and anti-gay stuff. That is absolutely true. I'm not saying he was a wonderful man who knew everything and was great. I'm saying as a pop culture icon, as far as the work that he did, he was a phenomenon. He was a fun character to talk about. You know, yeah, he had some crappy beliefs. It happens, guys. Unfortunately, most people you love have a few crappy beliefs.
I honestly didn't even know all that, but even hearing that, yeah, it doesn't, you know, it is what it is.
It's not surprising.
And the dude was 86 years old, and I'm not giving an excuse here for having a crappy belief, but at the end of the day, it's like, okay, grandpa.
Exactly. You know, an old man is overly religious and is afraid of gay people. Spoiler! Like,
he was Walker, Texas Ranger. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, and he was a world champion martial artist. He fought Bruce Lee. They were buddies, dude. Mm-hmm. Come on.
No, it's, you know, like that aside, I'm glad you brought that to light, because it is important to say, because it's like, yeah, you get some flack for being like, it's like, you have to remember that they did a lot. And it's like, yeah, maybe they said some crappy crap, but you know what? It's we're still going to honor them because they did a lot for the industry. And that's what this section of this podcast is about. You know, I mean, we try to keep the dicey stuff out of the talk.
Yeah, I mean, it is about separating the art from the artist. And if you personally cannot do that, that is fine.
I understand.
And we completely support it. Don't watch the movies. Don't support it. That's fine. But to get angry because we posted something on Instagram or choose to honor him on the show is a bit silly, because all his memes in the early 2000s alone, the fact that he was an action star in the 80s and star of his own cartoon, the fact that he was friends with Bruce Lee, these are all very significant pop culture things. So, sorry, we're going to tip our hat to that.
But at the same time, I encourage everybody to say what you want to say.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? Like, yeah, no, we don't care.
Yeah, to be clear, you don't like Chuck Norris? Cool. Yeah. I'm not trying to talk you into it.
Yeah, so so there goes a pop culture icon, Chuck Norris, age 86. We raise our glass to you, man. The heart of many jokes in Boy Scouts as I was growing up. The Chuck Norris jokes I could go on.
Yes.
So that brings us to Jamie Banks. Sorry, Blanks, age 54. Cause of death was sudden and unexpected death reported by the family. She was known for directing horror films. Urban legend.
Dude, by the way. Dude.
Oh, forgive me. Jamie, I don't know why I thought it. Sorry.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a man.
Forgive me.
He's an Australian director.
Forgive me. So Jamie Banks, he was directing horror films Urban Legend, 1998, and Valentine, 2001. He was an Australian film director and composer known primarily for the late 1990s and early 2000s horror and thriller films.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Urban Legend was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah. I liked Urban Legend. You know what's funny? I like Urban Legend 2 more. It was I think it was straight to video, but it was a sequel that took place at a film school. So that one, I was all about that one. It had the girl who played Emma Swan from Once Upon a Time. None of that matters. I'm going off on a tangent. Yeah.
But no, Jamie Blanks, we salute you. Age 54. A lot of young deaths this week.
I know. A lot of people in their 50s.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
That's not horrifying.
Right, I'm almost 40.
Yeah, well, you're gonna die soon.
Okay, that brings us. I will be joining them soon. Don't you threaten me with a good time. That brings us to Sam Keith, age 63. Cause of death was Lewy body dementia, a progressive neurological disease. Known for the creator of The Max. I remember The Max.
The
those
cartoon.
Cartoons with like the big teeth.
Yeah, it was based on a comic.
Artists on The Sandman, work on The Wolverine and The Hulk, Batman and Zero Girl. American comic book artist and writer known for his unique, surreal and psychological storytelling style. The Max became a cult classic in the 1990s and was adapted into an MTV animated series.
That's where you remember.
That's where I remember it. He was also the artist for the first issues of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, helping define the series' dark visual style. So like a very, very unique artist that we have lost here in Sam Keith.
Yeah, and man, you know what's funny about dementia? I don't know if it's horrible for the person who's afflicted by it. I imagine at the beginning when you start forgetting things, it's probably pretty scary. But it's just how hard it is for the family and the people around you.
It's
you know
wild.
I mean? to, you know, people you've been married to for like 50 years and suddenly you don't remember them. Like, that would be heartbreaking.
You're going to have to deal with that with me if you still hang around me long enough, man. Everybody in my family gets dementia. And near the end, it's a wild ride.
That is insane.
It sucks. It really does. But yeah, you know what I mean? It's certain memory. All the memories pretty much go away. But like, the comfort stays there. Like I can still go see my grandma right now and she does not remember me. She doesn't know who I am, but we still have that connection. We still can talk and
she feels okay with you. She knows you're someone.
The comfort is there, right? The memories are gone, but the love, the heart is there still.
That is a rough feeling.
It is wild. I went through that with my other grandmother before she passed, my grandfather before he, so oh yeah, it's going to happen to your boy. Who are you?
Well, we'll just start the show over. We'll just do the topics over again that you don't remember.
Welcome to Earthling Entertainment with Joe and... Who the hell is Joe?
Yeah. What episode is this? 1039? Holy shit!
I've been held here against my will. If you are hearing this... Get me out of here.
That is awful and hilarious.
Hey, I feel like because I've been through it, I can make a little joke. Oh, you know, it man, does suck. You know what I mean? But hey, so to everybody, I'll give one last hurrah. Carrie Ann Fleming, Nicholas Brendan, Chuck Norris, Jamie Blanks, Sam Keith. Rest in peace.
Well, yeah, we pour one out for you.
We do indeed. We do indeed. And I think that actually brings us to the end of the pop culture section, which is the Oreo cream filling of this podcast.
Ooh.
Greetings, future foundlings. I am Quentin.
And I'm Emily, and we are the hosts of the Missing Role Player Found Actual Play podcast. We offer intense roleplay, fully edited, immersive audio that will place you alongside us in our grand adventures.
Like in SAO, The Antithesis of Darkness, our series where if you die in the game, you die in real life.
That's right, we kill our players.
It's a humble beginnings to high fantasy isekai adventure where average people become legendary heroes.
But if you're more interested in post-apocalyptic science fantasy drama where humanity has been thrust back into the Middle Ages, then help us search for relics of bygone civilizations.
Because we can't find them.
In the Gate Chronicles.
Together, our cast and crew, we are Missing Role Player Found, an immersive, narrative-driven, actual play podcast with a catalog of different shows and more on the way. That's Missing R-O-L-L Player Found. So pull up a chair and join us on a grand adventure.
Ooh, that's true. And you know what? I'm feeling kind of alien-y. I'm feeling a little bit extraterrestrial, and I'm ready to do it, Ryan. Are you ready to go for this?
Let's go hang out with some sexy aliens.
Well, it's about time. On this week's...
Disclosure Discussion. It's about aliens and stuff.
This week's Disclosure Discussion title comes from Joe. Tall, blonde, and from space. Palladians.
Palladians!
Also known as Nordic aliens or... Tegetans.
It's funny because when we read this, like, I was like, aren't they talking about Nordics? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it is the same thing. Because the entire time we're talking about Palladians, I'm like, these are Nordics! Because I've only ever known them as Nordic.
Yep. And me too, honestly. That was how I knew them. I knew them as the Blondes, too.
Ah, fair enough. The tall elven creatures.
And they say are an Aryan-like humanoid aliens recorded in ufology.
Yeah. I'm not trying to get into this, but this is kind of where Hitler and the Nazis believed their descendants
and
were.
Honestly, since you brought it up, we might as well, just real quick. Because, yeah, that was like a whole thing that he had, like, a crew of people that he believed could contact these aliens. And that was how he described the perfect race or whatever was off of these Nordics. And that's obviously, like, you could dive into that yourself.
Yeah, we're trying not to get into the World War II of it all. But yeah, no, Hitler totally thought the Aryans came from these people.
Exactly. So.
So don't get pissed off, by the way, at the Palladians or the Nordics. They didn't do anything.
Right. That was far as we know.
Oh, Jesus.
So the Palladians.
Hold on. That's scary.
They come from the planets Era and Temur in the Tegeta system located in the Pleiades star cluster.
Pleiadians are humanoids, physically indistinguishable from Scandinavian humans. They are usually described as tall, standing over 1.8 meters, and in some cases 2 meters in height, and seem to have a robust physique. Physical beauty and a youthful appearance is common, whatever their age. Their skin ranges from fair to tanned. If cases such as that of contactee Elizabeth Clarer are of any indication, they also seem to be genetically compatible with humans. Although they have a pair more chromosomes than us, this race...
Hey guys, good news, we can bone them!
Better news, this race is mostly female.
Well, it's a... All right, you know what? This all starting to feel very fantasy-ish.
Palladians convey themselves as generally being peaceful, benevolent, ethical, and to be concerned with the welfare of Earth. Contactees often claim that the Palladians are interested in the future of our planet from an ecological and a sociological perspective, transmitting messages about environmental sustainability and the prospect of world peace. Members of this group have also been described as maternal, wise, spiritual, and jovial. Past lives are easily remembered amongst this race. The Palladian society has no money because there is no scarcity. Resources are abundant and easily accessible to everyone. While most individuals work, rough jobs are managed efficiently by non-humanoid robotics.
Does this not kind of feel like a white racist person's wet dream?
A little bit.
Like, I'm not trying to talk shit, but they're all hot, they're all blonde, way more women than dudes.
Tons of women.
Tons of women. Tons women of everywhere. Women. They know how to deal with robots.
Have you seen their physique?
No fucking war. No, you know why? Because they're all sexy. Nothing to fight about.
But the ones who want to work still work, you know?
Because it's a choice.
That's right.
Yeah, it feels a little... All right, continue, but I'm...
Pleiadians and aliens with similar phenotypes were frequently reported to visit Earth during the 1950s, particularly, but not exclusively, in Europe, before being supplanted by the Greys as the most commonly encountered race. Their relationship with the Greys varies in some cases, and we touched this with the reptilians, where it was like said that they actually kind of made them. In a way, and use them as a slave race.
I don't think. Well, the Greys were made, not the Nordics. Not
no,
the
no, Greys. Yeah. I was saying that the Greys were. We covered it.
Oh yeah, we talked about how. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember.
Had made them, so it's interesting to see that maybe there's like a hierarchy as well with these guys because their relationship with the Greys varies in some cases. They seem to act as leaders to them, whereas other reports seem to suggest that the two might be inimical. Sorry. Inimical, as they may try to warn people about the Greys. So they're actually warning us against the activities of the Greys because they're on behalf of the reptilians.
I don't think you're remembering that right, but continue.
Swiss contactee Billy Meyer has claimed to have had hundreds of contacts with the Palladians. He calls them Plejarans, a pronunciation corruption of the Germanic Pelagian. Meyer's testimony of contact goes back to when he was 11 years old in 1942. According to his experiences, the alien's home is located in the Pleiades star cluster and is named Era, a world smaller than Earth and scarcely populated in comparison, with only 500 million souls. Their average lifespan is 1,000 years, and they're said to be genetically related to Earth humans.
All right, so they don't have kids a lot. There must be laws against that, because otherwise, you know, 1,000 years, people don't die for 1,000 years. They must have, like, very seldom children to keep the population that low.
Right, or maybe there's something that we don't know. Maybe they don't, you know, they don't populate as easily as we do. Maybe it's like a... It takes a few decades.
Or like, what if their window for having children was like 2 years?
That's so what it's I'm like, saying. Like, yeah.
You live for 1,000, but you really got to try to get a kid in this 2 week period or it ain't God. Happening.
You know, I've got a headache. It's like, yeah, well, you know, we maybe should repopulate. You know, it's only like 1,000 of us here. Yeah, I got a headache. I'm not feeling it.
So they're said to be genetically related to Earth's humans, as both races descended from the primordial Lyrans. As in most other cases, Myers-Plejarans also behave as spiritual teachers, hoping to guide humanity towards a peaceful path of growth.
Why the hell are all these aliens trying to teach us stuff? Why do we always need enlightenment? Wouldn't it be great to find an alien race that comes to us and be like, holy shit, you guys got to figure it out. Tell us what's going on. We don't even know what we're doing.
Ashtar, what? Sometimes called Ashtar Sharan, is the name given to the extraterrestrial being or group of beings that a number of people claim to have channeled. UFO contactee George Van Tassel was the first to claim to receive an Ashtar message in 1952. After the introduction of Ashtar by Van Tassel, other mediums began to claim contact. At one point, dozens of people were claiming contact with Ashtar and presenting conflicting messages.
Oh, Ashtar? Yeah, I know that dude.
Oh, yeah, it's Ashtar.
He asked if I had a truck, wanted me to help move a couch. Don't ever buy a truck.
Yeah, he seemed like a nice guy until he stole my beer.
to add insult to injury for helping him move?
Yeah.
Ah.
That all right. Bastard.
All right. I thought you were going to build upon my thing, but you just went another way.
I did.
All right, fair enough. So let's talk about these hot, sexy aliens.
So anywho, the most widely publicized of these messages were met with failure when they predicted civilization flourishing on other planets and an imminent landing of spaceships on Earth. Oh yeah, that could never happen.
Right?
Due to his common depiction as a humanoid with blonde hair and European features, Ashtar may be considered a Pleiadian. The Ashtar movement is studied by academics as a prominent form of UFO religion. I mean, if you're going to have like a new alien Jesus, might as well be like blonde haired and physically beautiful.
I mean, that's a tall man. That's what we did with the original Jesus. We're like, we know he grew up in the Middle East, but he wasn't Arab. He was totally some white dude.
Why not?
So
why not?
Why not? And just to make an argument, I'm not saying anything bad, but technically, if you believe in that religion, Jesus was not from our planet. He was from a heavenly space. So didn't that make him extraterrestrial because he's not terrestrial to our planet? Just saying.
Dude, I wanted to come up with something, but I couldn't come up with anything.
I'm going to blow the lid off religion, right?
There we go. We figured it out here, right here on Earthling Entertainment. And that brings us to the end of Disclosure Discussion.
Do you feel like we've thoroughly discussed the disclosure?
I think we have thoroughly discussed the discussion of the disclosure.
At least for this week.
At least for this week.
All right, let's get a little weird now.
As if we don't always.
Real world weird.
The Great Hamster Claw Machine Incident. File this under things that sound fake, but unfortunately are not.
Yeah.
Several years ago, arcades in China came under fire for putting live animals inside claw machines. Yes. Actual living creatures, real hamsters, turtles, fish, and even crabs were used as prizes in some machines.
How would they put fish?
I'm guessing in like a... I don't...
Like in little plastic bags, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I saw something like years ago where like someone went to like a market somewhere and yeah, they had like live turtles in these pouches.
Well, I remember, like, back in the day when we were kids, we would go to a carnival and you could win, like, a fish.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? So that's, yeah, that's got to be it. But that, I mean, I guess they weren't in the claw machine, though, because they were off to the side and they handed you a fish.
Yeah.
So it's a little less cruel, maybe?
Slightly.
All right.
So the idea was exactly what you think it was. You put in a coin, you move the claw, and instead of winning a plush Pikachu, you might go home with a very confused turtle.
Yeah, right.
Now, in some cases, the claw wasn't grabbing the animals directly. Instead, it grabbed capsules or vouchers that could be exchanged for the animals. Okay, so that's a little better.
I mean, you assume...
A little better.
Well, you assume they're not just, like, in a drawer, like DVDs at Blockbuster, right? They pull it out and grab it.
Like
here's your turtle.
Like, instead of, like, the aliens from Toy Story, they're like, the claw! Yeah, mouse!
like, get away! And then you get these turtles moving incredibly slow with like intense chase music. Alright, we're done.
The animal welfare groups were not thrilled about this.
Yeah.
And that's putting it mildly. After photos and videos started spreading online, there was public backlash. And many of these machines were eventually removed or banned in certain areas.
I mean, let's be honest. They just put different shit in it. You're not going to get rid of the machine. So it smells like turtle. Whatever. Here's a stuffed animal.
Imagine being a hamster or lemminkies. And suddenly, a giant claw descends from the sky like you're in a low-budget alien abduction movie.
You know, it's funny that they say that, because that was my thought. My thought would be, like, this is an abduction to them. Like, this is the most insane, like, otherworldly event that could possibly happen. Like, you're in your little terrarium, and then this claw from the sky picks you up. And then next thing you know, Timmy has you. You're like, oh, no, you get put into a pocket. Hopefully he actually tries to take care of you and his parents to support it and like buy you a tank and stuff. And he's not just like, oh, I guess I'll let him out in the road. Ha ha ha, I'm a sadistic child.
And then that's how the hamsters repopulated America.
Feral hamsters everywhere.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
It'd be so adorable.
Hordes of feral hamsters. Just, it's like the Mummy movie from 1998 or 1999 where they just come and they just go over you like a wave. And when the hamster wave passes, you're a skeleton.
Yeah, but like the whole time you're like,
oh my God, they're so adorable. Oh my God. Death by cuties.
I'm okay with that. Honestly, if I were a hamster and survived that experience, I would never stop telling that story. You think you've had a bad day? A metal sky hand tried to pick me up while a kid named Kevin ate Skittles and missed five times.
Yeah. Yeah.
History.
Theirs was better. I should have just shut up.
History is weird. The world is weird. And somewhere out there is a hamster with a story that none of his mates believe.
You know what? I will admit 100% that that is animal cruelty, and you should not do that.
No.
But if I was younger...
you wouldn't know any better.
Well, no, what I mean to say is I might do it. If I went to, like, I don't know, if I was in China visiting, and I was in an arcade, and there's an arcade full of turtles, I might try to get one just to be like, I'm going to save that turtle. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. How many turtles were in there? Were they just stacked on top of each other? Was this, like, a horrifying, like... Auschwitz for turtles, or was it just like four of them and it was like a fine little terrarium that, you know, they were perfectly content in while in there? Like, we don't know. Maybe that claw machine had proper grow lights and vegetation.
I tend to go towards not so great.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
Not so great. So, yeah. So I'm glad that that got shut down.
Yeah.
Because that's messed up.
Probably for the best.
So that brings us to our second and last of the real world weird.
Not just that, the last segment of the show. So, you know, if you need to pee, just wait a little longer.
We're just good. Just a bit.
Yeah.
He did it for love.
That's the name of it. Say it again.
He did it for love.
Nope, you're not doing it right.
He did it for love.
All right, that's good. I like that. That felt very passionate. I was going to go with like a more like begging, like you're in trouble. Like, I did it for love.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, just that.
A 15-year-old in Germany may have just set the world record for most extreme way to pick up your girlfriend. The teenager broke into a bus depot in Wiesbaden, found a master key, and stole an entire city bus at around 6 in the morning. The craziest part is that employees saw the bus leave and just assumed, yep, it's probably one of our drivers.
I mean, to be fair, that might be how I would respond. You know, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's not like someone stole a bus.
Like, well, he just, the bus, it has to start, yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's all fine.
Let's talk about them sexy Palladians.
Unbex.
That's the problem, right? The damn Germans were talking about the Palladians and not stopping buses from being stolen.
So anyways, back to these sexy alien Nordics.
Yeah, full circle.
It wasn't until later that afternoon that the company realized they were missing an entire bus. Using GPS tracking, police found it about 80 miles away in Karlsruhe,
where officers pulled it over and discovered a 15-year-old behind the wheel who had just picked up his 14-year-old girlfriend from school and was heading back home.
It's kind of a baller move.
What is the problem?
Yeah, like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Police said that they were actually surprised at how well he was able to drive the bus.
That's true. They don't say an incident where he crashed anything or hurt anybody. No, he just stole a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mischief.
Yeah.
Just that. Little boys will be boys.
He now, though, faces charges for theft and driving without a license. But amazingly, no one was hurt and the bus wasn't damaged at all.
Okay, fair enough. But, like, he probably also got whatever 14-year-old version of getting laid is. I mean, that is a romantic gesture.
Think about it. You pull up.
He held hands so hard.
And you hear, like, right? And you hear, like, you know, like, the door open. Like, hey, babe, hop in.
Can you imagine coming out of school when your whatever boyfriend, girlfriend is just pulls up in a bus? You just look at your friends and be like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're adventurous, crazy young people.
And then, like...
That's crazy, though. Dude, I can't imagine stealing a bus. Like, having a balls to steal a bus and then driving it 80 miles.
Dude, and it's just like, then you just hijack, like, the lettering where it says you're going. It's like, going to Love Town.
You're going to Pound Town.
Going to Pound Town.
Oh, my God. Dude, when I first moved to L.A., I didn't actually have a proper credit card, so I couldn't rent a car. So I had to go to U-Haul and rent a 16-foot U-Haul truck and then drive through L.A. traffic just trying to find an apartment. And that's what that reminds me of. Because that was horrifying. As an adult man in L.A. traffic with that thing, I can only imagine being like, oh, I'm just going to drive a city bus. It's cool. I'm 15. I'm never going to die.
On a random, like, real world topic right now going on, like, that's happening. People have been, because rental cars are so hard to find, because there's so many cancellations of flights right now, that, yes, U-Haul has been having to deal with people renting them just to get home.
I mean, I did it.
Like, yeah,
a good idea.
People do it, and it's a big thing right now that U-Haul's trying to deal with.
You know, you start with trying to you get a U-Haul pickup truck, and if you can't get that, you get the U-Haul van. If you can't get that, you get the small truck. I had to get a 16-foot bed.
And people are doing that to drive across the country just to get home right now. So, like, that's wild. That's wild.
Actually not that bad, because if you think about it, a moving truck is probably used to having a lot of miles on it. So if you rent it just to drive, like, it might be cheaper than to rent a rental car and drive
across the country. I don't know about that.
You don't know about that?
Oh, you're probably talking over a grand.
Dude, I don't know. We used a pod. Do you know what pods are?
No.
It's like a shipping container. Like, they put it in the road, and we put all our shit in it from L.A., and then they came and picked it up and took it, you know, all the way to Detroit. And it was pretty funny because it cost like $5,000. But the funny thing is, we had already left. Like, we were gone for like a day. So we're in, I don't know, Arizona or something, you know, New Mexico. I have no idea. And they call us and they're like, hey, this, it's too heavy. We can't pick it up. And I'm like, oh, well, we don't live there anymore. So
try harder.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure it out. Right. And, you know, they hit us back up and they eventually did. I mean, I don't know what they did. I wasn't there, but I remember for a short time thinking like, well, what do we do? Like, do you go back home, unpack it? Like, what do you do?
Why is my bowling ball collection not here yet?
Like, you know,
they just started emptying out shit.
Ryan, those were very sentimental bricks. Okay, that was my brick collection I needed to bring across the country.
They're like, we had to make an executive decision on your bricks, sir.
Bastards.
So, back to the story of this 15-year-old in Germany who stole a bus just to pick up his love. Remember, gentlemen, flowers are nice. Chocolates are nice. But apparently, stealing public transportation is the new bar.
That's gonna get you laid.
That's right. It's time to raise the bar.
Oh, man. I mean, we joke, but seriously, like, for that girl's rest of her life, she'd like, you know, my boyfriend when I was 14 stole a bus for me. What did you do, Greg? Shit. What did you do?
I got you flowers.
Yeah, she's, you know...
Damn.
I don't know why he became like a New York. I don't know what happened there.
That was a bad New York accent.
I don't know why.
Oh, man. Sometimes things are just a mystery. I don't know why either. Like, for instance, I have no clue why it is we have to end this podcast.
We could just keep doing the rest of the day. Honestly, we could. This would be a much better life than having to go back to my heartless job tomorrow where they just suck my soul out and they take advantage of me.
Anywho. Well, guys, actually, the truth is we do have to end the show. Despite Ryan's really sad story.
Keeping it light.
It's more like the fact that we have to record, we got to record a promo for an upcoming event, and we have to record a audio commercial for our own podcast, for another podcast. We actually have some stuff to do. But thank you so much for joining us here on episode 120 of the Earthling Entertainment Podcast. You guys are the reason why we do this. Honestly, if nobody listened, we would have given up by now. We appreciate it, and we're growing every day. Our audience, our Earthling friends, are just, you guys, I'm just so happy with all the responses we've had and all the downloads and all the great comments. And it's very supportive. We appreciate that. So please remember to continue downloading. And if you'd like to talk to us about anything at all, you could hit us up at earthlyentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com or any of our socials.
And we've got a lot of like really cool things. We are going to reciprocate the energy we've been getting from you guys. We've got a lot of really cool things coming up. Even at the beginning of next year, we can't even announce it yet. But we got big things coming, and it's all thanks to you, like Joe said.
Conventions. And
that's right. So, guys, please, the best thing that you can do is share us with a friend, with a coworker. If you like what we're doing, share us around with a fellow Earthling, because at the end of the day, hey, we're all Earthlings. We're all in this together, and we like to have a good time and talk about nerdy stuff, and that is exactly what we do here.
That's right. So from all of us here at Earthling Entertainment,
see ya!
And as always, goodbye.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm John. We're the hosts of Zombie Strains, the podcast where we watch all of the zombie movies in chronological order.
It has been a wild ride so far, discovering where and when all our favorite zombie tropes originated. Things like the first cannibal zombies,
Bowery at Midnight, 1942,
the first rage zombie,
Teenage Zombies, 1959,
and the first homicidal zombie,
Dr. Blood's Coffin, 1961.
If you love zombie films as much as we do, join us on Zombie Strains.
Find Zombie Strains on your podcast app of choice.